So it's so nice to see so many wide awake faces after lunch. It's a little difficult sometimes here. But we will continue. This is so interesting to hear about King Indra because, well, think about this. Srila Prabhupada one time said that if we perform our devotional service and we're unsuccessful, we may end up in the heavenly planets. You may end up in the heavenly planets as a reward. Why? Because the heavenly planets are achieved by great amounts of piety, not bhakti, piety. Now, this is a very interesting point because bhakti and piety, they seem almost to be the same. I would say that when you're speaking to pious people. If you're speaking to impious people, then they don't know what is piety and impiety. Sub, asub, piety and impiety. All religions of the world recommend piety over impiety. So piety basically means that I do things in a way not to harm other people, not to cause trouble to society, not to give anybody any pain, but to gain something for myself. And bhakti is different because bhakti has a different aim in mind. And in the beginning, because we're practicing bhakti, but we're in the beginning stages of bhakti, piety and bhakti look almost the same to us. We struggle just to keep piety going in this Kali Yuga age. It's difficult to remain pious. What to speak of bhakti. So also, Lord Chaitanya says, you don't even need piety to perform bhakti. Anybody, no matter how disagreeable and sinful they are, if they decide in their heart they want to offer something to Krishna, they immediately begin from that point on the path of bhakti. And Srila Jiva Goswami points out that the story of Vritasura is very important because it shows the independent nature of bhakti. Independent nature of bhakti. It shows that even bhakti can come in the heart of a demon, or bhakti can arise in the heart of an animal, who's an animal who developed bhakti. Gajendra, who else? Bharat Maharaja's a deer, Hanuman. So many examples are there of bhakti, even in an animal's body. So this is inconceivable to the ordinary materialistic mind of men. They think that I do this and I get that. It's cause and effect. It's fruitive. I plant a tree, an apple tree, and apples grow on it. I don't expect to get oranges or bananas. It's obvious. You do this, you get that. And this is how sometimes our minds work like this, in this very mechanical, mechanistic way. We want to know the formula for bhakti. So tell me what I need to do and what I don't do, and I'll do that, and I won't do that, and I'll get what? And you'll see that in your mind's mind, you're still thinking with yourself in the center. I'll practice bhakti, and then I'll become so advanced, and then I won't have to suffer. I won't have to have rebirth, because it does sound a little troublesome. I won't have pains in my life. I'll have a happy life if I practice bhakti. No, that's practicing punya. You do pious activities, pious results will come. But bhakti is not like that. Therefore, a lot of people don't like bhakti. They would rather do pious activities, because pious activities, you get your reward for that. How can it be, for example, that I can become a devotee and difficulties may come my way? Krishna never promises I will take away all difficulties. He never promised Arjuna, you just surrender unto me, you sit down here and I'll do the fighting. He told him, you fight, but fight for me. You lead your daily life, you lead your family life, you lead your worldly life, but learn how to lead it for me. Now, when the worldly life is troublesome, people think, oh, I have to practice some bhakti because I'm having troubles now. And then when the troubles don't go away from the practice of their bhakti, they lose a little faith. But that is because they're making this mistake. Punya and bhakti are different. They weigh up differently on the scales of life. And if you get this right, then it will be much easier for you in your Krishna consciousness. So let me read you something that I found very interesting. And probably, if you listen to it very carefully, it will also do a sort of a number, they say. It will do a number on your brain. You'll sort of go, Let's see. So this is a conversation between Pradyumna, who was Prabhupada's Sanskrit scholar, who would travel with him and do all the translation work, and Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada says, so for the Kshatriya, this animal killing, this which is abominable, but they require it. So Pradyumna says, intoxication too? And Prabhupada says, yes, intoxication also. Just like Lord Balaram, he was drinking madhu. Yes, you have not seen? He was also enjoying in the company of women because he was a Kshatriya. The Kshatriyas are allowed polygamy, drinking, intoxication because they are king. They must have some facility. At the same time, they are ruling over the country. They take consultation from great sages and saintly persons. And if he is not in order, then these saintly persons will dethrone him. Prithu Maharaja's father was killed by Venu. He was not according to the system, so he was killed. Pradyumna, but I don't understand how sometimes how intoxication of some type of wine would go along with ruling a country. Prabhupada, well, for rulers, it is a pleasure. They must have some pleasure. Just like the ordinary men, they drink with women, dancing. It is recreation. So this is material recreation, to be a little intoxicated and have several nice girls around. This gives him some encouragement, you see? You see, they have to take so many risks, so much responsibility. And so for recreation, they require it. They should be given little facility, devotee. But can they still make spiritual advancement? Prabhupada, well, spiritual advancement is going on. They are taking advice from great saintly persons. They are observing. They are performing big sacrifice. Spending money, treasury, that is their spiritual advancement. So is this a little bit unusual? So far, Srila Prabhupada is saying, they can do this, they can do all the things that we're not supposed to do. They can do that, that's for their recreation. And their spiritual advancement is going on. So I found there was a part of my mind about here started thinking, oh, tell me more about this process. And then I went, oh! And ask that part of my mind to be a little careful. So we continue on. So that part of my mind became a little curious. My goodness, I've never heard this formula before. So Srila Prabhupada continues. You are satisfying Krishna in spite of all these devatas, the demigods, they also enjoy. In the higher planetary system, like Indra, he is prostitute hunter number one. And then everyone laughed. And he said, but he is great devotee at the same time. Now, all the wires start to cross. Pradyumna says, but he is still in the material world. And Prabhupada says, yes, yes, this is material. So those who are going to directly transfer to the spiritual world, for them, all these things are prohibited. But for those who want to remain here, at the same time, they have got some particular duty. these are also. In other words, Prabhupada is saying, for those who want to remain here, you can do all of these things. You can do your service. Some spiritual will come. You can do these things as well. And then the devotees are thinking, hang on a minute, we hear Srila Prabhupada criticizing all of these sinful activities. And he begins to put it into a perspective. He says, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that those who are preparing Bhagavat Bhajan, they must give up all these things. Devotees, they do not want these things, anything. They do not want any glaring possessions. Even Lord Brahma, Bhaktivinod Thakur says, I don't care to take birth as Brahma. Better let me become an insect where your devotee is there. So, says Srila Prabhupada, our purpose is different. We don't want even the exalted place like Lord Brahma in this material world. We don't want. That is our determination. We want Krishna. Go back to home, back to Godhead. Now the difficulty is for us that we may still have in our heart some desire for these things of this material world that Srila Prabhupada has dismissed. And so when we hear these things, they kind of create a confusion for us. We're not quite sure what to follow. It seems like as if we're now being allowed to do things that we've been told that we shouldn't do, or they're being sanctioned. But what sort of person can do these things? Somebody who wishes to stay here and enjoy the material world. And this is the nature of Indra. And is he not a devotee? No, he's a devotee. What kind of devotee? He's known as a mixed devotee or a materialistic devotee. So we may also be materialistic devotees. We may also have our desires. We go over here for something and over here for something else. We have, like Vishwarup had three heads. One was for drinking somaras. One was for eating. And the other one was for drinking wine. And still he was a brahmana. So this is very interesting. Now I can expand my enjoyment in this material world. Pradyumna says, could these enjoyments of a kshatriya, and Prabhupada continues on, cuts him off and says, therefore, param na yat param. What is that verse? Param na, Pradyumna says, yat param. Prabhupada, yat param. Pradyumna says, sundarshayam asa param na yat param. So this is a Sanskrit sentence. Prabhupada says, yes, param. We are seeing here in this material world, this apartment is better than the downtown apartment. It is param. It is better. Param, better. It's superior. So I'm seeing this here. This is better. To become Indra, that's better. I'll get more enjoyment that way than where I am right now. We are seeing like that. Param means better or superior quality. So here in this material world, we are finding out something superior than the others. Because it is a relative world. Something is better, something is worse. But the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, na yat param. Na yat param means there is no more param. Finished. All param finished. Nothing is superior to that. Pradyumna says, nothing is superior than this. And Prabhupada says, yes. Param, you can say it is a very nice apartment. Why should I know? Where shall I go after Vaikuntha? But he has no idea. He thinks like this. Now listen to this and see if we think like this. Because if we do, we should renovate or improve our way of thinking. He thinks that if I go to Europe, I get a better standard of living, better women, and a better salary. But he has no idea what is param or what is superior. Therefore, param nayat param. There is nothing more superior. All superior finished. This is the Bhagavat. Param nayat param. Final. Now, if you're going on a tram or a train, I've had this experience. Our house, when I was growing up, was just near to the tram line to the city. And it was just near the terminal. So it was very convenient because you'd get on the tram from the city and you could go to sleep if you want. You would never miss your stop because it would stop at the terminal. Then you get off and you can go home. So we should understand that this Krishna consciousness is param nayat param. It's final. There's nothing above this. So if we want to try, this is better than this and that's better than that, and I'll get more of this and more of that, which is the tendency of the materialistic mind to do that, then we'll always find another one, a higher, this is better, more enjoyment, and so forth. But Prabhupada says, final. Final beauty is Krishna. Final opulence is Krishna. Final strength. Final wisdom. Everything is final in Krishna. Everything is ultimate. No more. Therefore, he is called Param Ishwar. Ishwar means commander, and there are many commanders or controllers. Indra means Ishwar. But Krishna is called Parameshwar. There is no more. And Krishna says, there is no more superior than me. Param nayat param. So if we want to become above this platform of mixed devotional service, it's imperative that we get to know Krishna. Otherwise, what will we do? Where can we go? We'll just be trying a higher and a higher and a better and a better, and we'll go on like this for so many countless of lives. Prabhupada says, the demigods in the heavenly planets and many devotees on this planet also want to remain in the material world as devotees and take advantage of material happiness. They do so at the risk of falling down to the lower species of existence. And this makes the Lord dissatisfied with them. So who do we want to please? Pure devotees are not desirous of any material enjoyment, and nor are they averse to it. They completely dovetail their desires with the desires of the Lord, and they perform nothing on their own personal account. Materialistic persons aspire for sense enjoyment of heavenly pleasure in the heavenly kingdom, but devotees reject such materialistic pleasure at once. The devotee does not even care for the post of Indra. A devotee knows that any pleasurable material position is subject to be annihilated at any time. Even if one reaches the post of Indra, Chandra, or other demigods, he must become dissolved at a certain stage. A devotee is never interested in such temporary pleasure. That's a high standard, isn't it? When we think about it for a minute, we can say, yes, yes, you know, like your football team. Yes, yes, ara. Wonderful. But actually, when we look at our hearts, look at ourselves, we find like, wow, my goodness, that's a very high standard. I don't know how I personally can ever reach such a standard. But this quest must begin somewhere. And therefore, we have to hear. And by hearing and hearing and continuously hearing something of Krishna and something of the material world, it's like a scale. If you have a certain amount of weight here and weight here, then this one is down and this one is up. But if you keep taking a little transferal, a small transferal of service, a small transferal of hearing goes like this, then one point the scales will become equal. And if you keep putting something there, gradually, the scales will tip in the opposite direction. And I can say for myself, you come to a point where you feel safe. You may not feel perfect. You may not feel fully purified, because perhaps as you go on in devotional service, you see more and more of your disqualifications. But you feel safe. The scale has tipped, and you don't have the same degree of interest in trying to get the scales to go the other way again. It's not attractive anymore. It was such hard work to get them to tip like that. So Prabhupada said one time to devotees, in a very from the heart way, he said to them, please do not give up your hard-earned knowledge. So when I heard that, I thought, yes, actually, it is hard work to change the mind from the materialistic, good and bad, happiness and distress, over to this principle that there's nothing beyond Krishna. And if I want him, I can and will attain him. I would like to share with you a couple of points that Srila Prabhupada makes about the heavenly planets, just in case anybody was interested in going there. You know, if you had it sort of on your list somewhere, I'll be good so I can go and visit Indra, and with the wine and the drink and the women and so forth. So, of course, nobody here has such an aspiration. But just to chase such thoughts away from us, a great distance, we must hear the Bhagavatam, and it will immunize us and protect us from such aspirations. Because practically speaking, we may not be thinking like that, but the whole 99.9999% of the world is. And so how do you feel? A little vulnerable, perhaps, when you go outside into the world and try to interact with people and go on with your work and so on and so forth, where you're dealing in a materialistic environment. There's social pressure that comes from such a worldliness that Kali Yuga offers to the people, and the people happily accept. So let us hear a little bit about the heavenly planet. Prabhupada says, Indra is not very happy there. Although the higher planets, the duration of life, and the standard of civilization, and the standard of comforts, is many, many thousands of times greater than here. But the same problem, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, growing old, and becoming ill, you cannot avoid it. So in the heavenly planets, perhaps they do not grow old, and perhaps they do not get disease like we do, but still death is there. And so death means, as Prabhupada said, a dissolving of your situation here. So Indra also has this problem. Don't think that the heavenly planets are very safe. We have got information from the Bhagavatam that Lord Indra is always perplexed. So many demons are disturbing. Fighting is going on. And although they have a long duration of life, tens of thousands of years, that is their duration of life, still they have these difficulties. Also, Indra is also not safe because he is always in anxiety about position. And what does that put you in anxiety towards? Position means you have enemies. What else do you have? They may not be your enemies, but they are your rivals, competitors. So Indra, he always has competitors. He's always in anxiety about competition, who may come. So do not think that the heavenly planets are very safe. We have information from the Bhagavatam that Lord Indra is always being disturbed by so many demons, and fighting is going on. And that is what we're hearing about, and we'll continue to hear about tomorrow. So Prabhupada continues on and he says, in the heavenly planets, because everybody, even if they like to enjoy worldly life, they also like a bit of, what else do they like? What do they hope to achieve from their religious activities? No, if they're not interested in immortality or anything like that. Power? No. What do most people, when anyone asks you about your religious practices, what do they usually ask you if you have attained? No, no. Peace! Peace! Are you peaceful? No! Oh! So the conclusion is that to try to please Krishna, we have tried to improve our condition of life even by becoming demigods. But don't think that the demigods are without danger. We have learned from history, Bhagavat, the Puranas. Indra was so many times perplexed. So our business should not be to become very, very great person within this material world, because that will never be possible. In the higher planets, lower planets, whatever you desire, you can get. Big, big position, but never safety. And therefore, never peacefulness. You will never get it. Do you think that in our modern world, there are so many, many Birlas and other Tatas, do you think that they are actually happy? When I read this, I thought superficially, yes. Then I thought, hang on a minute. And I remembered that when I was living in Hong Kong many, many, many long years ago in the 1970s, early 70s, we made friends somehow by preaching with one very, very influential, well-to-do Sindhi family. They were called the Harilila family. They're very powerful in Hong Kong and other places. And I used to visit their house and teach their children. And I was only in my early 20s. And the children were all small, up to maybe 8 years of age. And so every Monday afternoon, I'd go to their big house, three-story house, like apartments on all floors. Downstairs was a huge ballroom, which was all beautifully decorated. And everybody, and there was a communal toy room about as big as this half of the temple room, full of shelves of toys that looked like Toys R Us. Except they were everybody's toys. And then in their own rooms, they had big, big rooms full of toys as well. And so many wonderful things that you could acquire. And for some time, it was a little attractive to me because I had never seen this kind of wealth and comfortable living. So I was teaching the children. And then gradually, I came to know the families. And I met one girl who was just maybe 5 or 6, 7 years older than I was, who was from the main family, the oldest brother of the Hari Hari Lila, the wealthiest of the whole Hari Lila family. She was his oldest daughter, and she had started telling me about her life. She wasn't actually allowed to go outside. They had like had a big wall around the place, the security, because you have to be careful of things. And they had guards, and you had to press a button, and you had to show your ID before you could get in. And this was in the 70s, so I don't know what they do now. But she wasn't allowed to go outside because she had actually implicated herself in some very unfortunate worldly activities. She had somewhat become, as much as she could, like a hippie. And she had become drug addicted. And she had sort of been traveling around with musicians and rock stars and people like this. And at one point, they had actually disowned her. She came to Australia with her partner at the time. They went to Bondi Beach one evening to enjoy themselves. And he went into the water for a swim, and he never came out. And so then, with all of her difficulties and problems, she began to have some kind of a breakdown. So they brought her home. But they were very, very cautious about her. They didn't want her to go outside. They didn't want people to meet and talk to her. It was a bit of an embarrassment. Plus, she wasn't really repentant. So I used to spend time talking to her about Krishna consciousness and other things. And gradually, by just spending time in their household, I began to see so clearly for myself that it never, ever left, that there's no correlation between happiness and wealth. They have nothing to do with each other. You can have some things that have a correlation. You have this, you get this, but not happiness and wealth. And in fact, wealthy people are usually implicated because they've done all kinds of black market things to get their wealth. And so they're implicated for the suffering that they may have caused to others, especially a family of this stature, because it's not easy to become so wealthy. So usually there's something illegal involved in acquirement of the wealth. So when I saw that, it was very helpful for me, although it was quite an extreme case, you could say. There are many pious wealthy people as well, and these were not pious wealthy people. But the fact remains that there isn't any link between wealth and happiness. So when Srila Prabhupada asks us all, do you think that the Birlas are happy? Do you think that the Birlas are happy? Do you think they don't have anxiety? Do you think they don't have diseases and their family members disappoint them? And they want to finish off deals and make money and so on, and they have competition and envy and rivalry? So in the same way as the Birlas and the Tatas aren't happy, also Indra is not fully happy. There is no peacefulness there. Now I'll ask you, can you think of any examples of Indra where he may have made a mistake of one sort or another with his activities in relationship to others? Can anyone think of any examples? So many examples. What are they? Govardhan. Govardhan. So, Prabhupada says that when Indra became angry and he showed his power, he got his thunderbolts ready, and he wanted to destroy everyone in Vrindavan because he had been left out. His sacrifice that was annually performed had been disregarded, and instead the worship was given to a mountain. And did you know that Indra and mountains are perpetual enemies? Did you know that? In Satya Yuga, according to the Vedas, mountains could move. They had wings. They could actually move from one place to another. Now, wouldn't that be disturbing? Can you imagine if you were watching a mountain flying overhead and it was just about to land right here? So the sages requested Indra to do something. So when Treta Yuga began, Indra was the one with his thunderbolt. He cut the wings of the mountains. So to have Giriraj, a mountain, worshipped instead of him, was an insult to Indra. So the residents of Vrindavan, they love Krishna without any condition. And similarly, Krishna also loves them without any condition. Raja Jana Valava Giri Varadhari. When the inhabitants of Vrindavan were in danger, because they stopped the Indra Yajna, right? And Indra became very angry. He sent very powerful clouds and rain all over Vrindavan for 7 days. And when the inhabitants became very much disturbed, Krishna taught Indradev. He said, to stop your disturbance is the business of my little finger. And that's all. The business of my little finger to stop you. A little finger is so weak, right? You're going to fight with an opponent with your little finger. But he said, my little finger can stop you. You're so insignificant. Your anger is not even comparable to my little finger's end. That's all. What about another time that Indra did something? Yes. 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 And what happened? Yes. 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 He came and he stopped him and told him that the child within this womb is pure and sinless. And even if you try to kill him, you cannot. Because he's a great devotee of the Lord. He's always protected by the Lord himself, by Lord Vishnu. And then he took Kayadu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu, to his ashram. And there he instructed her all through the rest of the pregnancy. And she, being a woman, she was just thinking, where's my husband and what's going to happen to me here and what's the future going to be like and how are we going to take care of everything? And so she wasn't listening very, very deeply, but Prahlad was. And so when Prahlad came out from the womb of his mother, he was already having full transcendental knowledge because of the mercy of Narada Muni. Yes, any more? Come on, you say there are plenty. Tell me some. Satyabhama. Yes. Satyabhama. Because Narada, he's also very playful. He likes to sometimes cause a little trouble because that sometimes adds a little spice to life. So one time he came to Dwarka and he had one beautiful heavenly Parijat flower in his hand. And he asked Krishna in front of all his queens, sitting in the Sudama assembly, please take this beautiful Parijat flower and give it to your favorite queen. Wow. Krishna had to think very quickly. So he thought very carefully and he decided that the best thing to do was to give the flower to Rukmini, because after all, she was his senior queen. So he handed the flower to her, and as the flower reached her hand, Satyabhama got up and walked out of the room and left. Went back to her palace. She took off all her royal clothes and her jewelry, and she put on special clothes that queens have to go to a special room that they have. And then they go into that room, they lie on the floor, and they cry and cry and cry, and the king knows, oh, I've offended my queen. And he knows, now I have to do something. So Satyabhama became very offended. And she came to her room like that. And Krishna came to appease her. And he said, why do you want one Parijat flower? Come with me and I will give you a whole tree of Parijat flowers. So then riding on Garuda, Krishna took her to the Indralok. And at the same time, he killed Narakasura to return the earrings of Aditi. So he was doing Indra a favor. He was returning something that had been taken from him. And Indra received him very graciously and thanked him very much. And then, just as he was leaving, he saw the Parijat tree. And he put the tree, pulled the tree up to take on to Garuda. And Indra said, my dear sir, you can't take that. So, while he was doing so, Indra came. No, sir, he said, you cannot do that. You cannot take this tree to the lower planets. No, I cannot allow. So then Krishna said, no, my wife wants it. I must. Prabhupada said, that is Krishna. He is so complete. He is just like a henpecked husband. And everyone laughed. And Prabhupada said, to satisfy the wife in every respect. The wife may think that how much my husband is attached to me. So she remains very much satisfied. But Krishna is not attached to anyone. That is Krishna's super excellence. And although he has to satisfy 16,108 wives, everyone was satisfied. And everyone was thinking that Krishna is very much attached only to me. He is more attached to me than his other wives. This was Krishna's play. And in the Harivamsa, it explains that Indra, he actually can't see Krishna as we hear about Krishna. He thinks of Krishna as who? His brother. His younger brother. Upendra. He thinks of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. He can't actually see Krishna in the same way. So he was thinking to himself, my brother has taken his appearance in the material world. And now he has become very much under the control of women. So this is how he was seen. Any other escapades? Oh, that's why Prabhupada says prostitute hunter number one. Yes, he took the form of Gautama Rishi and approached Gautama Rishi's wife, whose name is Ahalya. And because he did that, Gautama Rishi cursed him. And his curse was, that which you are very attracted and attached to, may it be all over your body. And Indra immediately was very, very, very embarrassed. So at the request of Lord Brahma, the request was made that please make it that Indra has eyes all over his body. And so then they were transferred and he had eyes all over his body. And I don't know, this is a question I was thinking to ask one of our Sanskrit authorities like Banu Maharaj, whether or not every Indra has eyes all over his body, or whether it was a particular Indra who took part in that particular activity. So we may say, that's terrible. But when we think about it, Indra, this is Indra's prowess. This is what you can get from Indra. You can get the power to attract women and enjoy women to your heart's content from this particular demigod. It is the universal function which he presides over. So this is all within the material world. We can, yes, we can sort of enjoy in the material world, but the enjoyment of the material world always provides also some degree of implication, obviously. And so Indra had to wear the implication of his mistake. Any other times Indra misbehaved? Yes, thank you. Indra and Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj wanted to perform the Asavamedha sacrifice 100 times. And when he had performed this very pompous Vedic sacrifice 99 times, Indra started thinking that this was a competitor. The word Bhagavan Indra indicates that a living entity can even be as exalted and as powerful as King Indra. For even Indra is an ordinary living entity in the material world, and he possesses the four defects of the conditioned soul. King Indra is described here as Bhagavan, which is generally used in reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why do we call him Bhagavan Indra and say he's a conditioned soul? In this case, King Indra is addressed as Bhagavan because he has so much power in his hands. So much power. Despite his becoming Bhagavan, he is envious of an incarnation of God, Prithu Maharaj. Just think about that. You could become envious. The defect of material life is so strong that due to the contamination, King Indra becomes envious of an incarnation of God. So this is the risk when one has so much power that one starts to think, I have all the power. I'm such an important person. Nobody is more important than me. Any others? Yes, he disrespected the Mahagalan given by Durvasa Muni. He was riding on the road on his elephant, and Durvasa Muni gave him one garland, and out of disrespect, he placed the garland on the trunk of the elephant. And when he did that, the elephant couldn't understand the value of the garland, plus bees started coming around the garland, and so the elephant threw the garland down and trampled it. So Durvasa Muni became very angry with him. And seeing this insulting behavior, he cursed Indra immediately to become poverty-stricken and bereft of all opulence. And sometimes it is said that he cursed Indra to become old And all of a sudden, all the demigods got wrinkles like us. And their hair started to gray. And they became very worried. So yes, this is another one. And I'll give you one more. And that is when Vishvamitra was trying to perform austerities because he was a king and he wanted to become a brahmana. So he was practicing austerities and Indra became very concerned. And what is typical of Indra is that he sent beautiful ladies, because he has so many of them at his disposal, the apsaras. He sends a beautiful heavenly girl and she comes, and of course in this case she just tinkled her ankle bells and tinkled her bangles a little bit. And Vishvamitra opened his eyes, and as soon as he opened his eyes, then he was subdued by her beauty. And therefore Shakuntala was born. So throughout the Vedas, Indra is listed as great, as powerful, as Bhagavan. But he also makes many, many of these, what would you say, errors of judgment. So this is a large magnified example of us, isn't it? We're down here making little mistakes and little good deeds, and there he is up here, very greatly powerful, doing the same thing but in a very enlarged way. I wanted to share this with you because tomorrow we're going to start to hear what is the example of somebody whose devotion is pure. So the more that we can put the two side by side, the easier it is for us to think to ourselves, I wish my devotion was a little more pure. I wish that I was a little less self-centered. I wish that I was a little less determined to stay in this world and try to enjoy it. I wish that I could make some progress in this way also. So I'll stop here. And if there are any questions, I welcome them. And if not, Keshava's here. So I know that's a good sign. Yes. Which you might not consider a risk. You might be looking for that. Maybe. Yeah. No. No, it's a sadhana. It's a sadhana. It will take you somewhere. Sadhana means practice, right? You know, we hear people, they say, oh, how are you doing with your practice? So there's all kinds of practices. You can be practicing to be a Buddhist. You can be practicing to be a devotee. You can be practicing to become a wealthy man. You can be practicing to become a deva. And that way you do a little enjoyment on this side and some bhakti over here, and you're accumulating both. So where will you go? You've done so many good things. And you've done so many worldly things. What's Krishna to do to satisfy you? So yes, if you say, I'm going to do bhakti, and when nobody's looking, I'm going to do some materialistic things behind everybody's back, then if you're thinking, and then after I do them, I'll just chant some japa, and that will get rid of that. I won't have to worry about the effect of that. Then I can do both, like in that mentality. Yeah, that is not good. But there's a lot of people who, they have a taste for both. They have a taste for both. So when you have a taste for both, then naturally you will do both. So we encourage them to do some more bhakti. And of course we try to help them to understand the value and the gain of bhakti, and also the implication of doing worldly activities, because you have to, everything that we do here, we have to, it's all accountable. And that's what we resist with great force, to accept that. And when we suffer, we blame somebody. And we don't learn in that way. Any other? Yes. 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 Material. Yes. Well, we have to say that, first of all, the more that we're under the influence of material energy, the less accurate we will be. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, it explains how there are different degrees of covering of lust, like the mirror and then so and the trees and then the embryo in the womb. And each one is a greater degree of covering. So that's a greater degree of obscurity between yourself and the spiritual. So we need to come out as far as possible, right? We need to not be like the baby in the womb. We need to be more like the mirror that's covered by the dust. So what do we do for that? Where is there another example of a mirror covered by dust that we know? Yes. There's the example of the mirror covered by dust. And what do you do? Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So this is why it's so wonderful that particularly the youth, like I was here last visit and we had that 12-hour kirtan, that the youth of our movement are interested in Sankirtan. Even though they may still be, or we may be still covered by that dust of the modes, the material way of thinking, we can't see beyond the material world. But the holy name descends into this world, even though we have practically no realization of that even. But if we do that out of obedience, in the beginning, we do it out of obedience. And then as that mirror dust is cleared, then in that particular verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's verse, Shikshastikam, it tells you all the wonderful things that will occur if you can clean the dust off the mirror of the heart. So another point on what you're saying, it's a fact that right now when we think of the spiritual world, we can only think in terms of matter. So what is the reconciliation there? Because here we are, we're stuck here. There's a gap. You know when you pay your hospital benefits and the hospital bill comes in and your benefits don't cover it, there's a gap. So there's a big gap here. We're here in the material world. And that's there. The spiritual world is another level, another dimension. If there's no process from going from here to there, then how can we speak of the mercy of the Lord? Then that means we're eternally condemned. So there must be a process. And part of that process is the chanting. Part of that process is the hearing. And by the chanting and the hearing, gradually we start to think. We think about things. We see things around us and they remind us of something we heard. Or gradually that hearing and chanting seeps into our vision of life as we see it. And in the beginning, you could say that our spiritual realizations are more or less imagination. Because we're not purified enough yet to have a clear conception. But we're going in that direction. Just like with a child, when they're young, they might say, oh, I want to be a fireman. It will be so nice. When I grow up, I will be able to drive one of those red, shiny fire trucks. And I will go to fires and I will spray them with my water gun and they all disappear, all the fire. It will be so much fun. I want to be that when I grow up. And we know that's a little bit like a little bit childish because it's not that simple. And fires are dangerous and so forth. But they don't know that. But they fix on that. I want to do that. And as they grow and mature, the childish aspect of their bhakti will diminish and they'll become more and more mature in their understanding. And they release or relinquish as they grow and mature the childish idea for a newer level and a newer level and a newer level. Right? And then they'll get onto Google and they'll find out what an engine really looks like and what firemen really do. And then they'll start to become really, yes. So like that, our Krishna consciousness should be growing like that from whatever stage we're at. And in the beginning, like a child, it's somewhat imaginative. I think Krishna likes this. Krishna's very pleased with this. Krishna's like this. Krishna's like that. Yes, yes, yes. But it's good that we're using our imagination in that way rather than thinking, I think I am wonderful like this, and I think I'm this, and I think I'm that. But that humility should be there, that we're just still the mirror is covered in dust. And by the process, the Chaitodarpanamajanam, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam, the dust will clear and we'll be able to see from within. Prabhupada said it's like we have a television set. He's trying to find our language. It's like you have a television set in your heart and you can actually see the pastimes of Krishna broadcast from the spiritual world. You can see them. Well, that's something we can all relate to. Our own personal television set and watching Krishna. But of course, it must be much better than that. Yes. Yes. Well, that's at a very advanced stage. Bhava bhakti. Then the spiritual senses start to become uncovered by the material senses. Basically, you could say like this, that now any devotee who's practicing some degree of Krishna consciousness, their consciousness or their being, their composition, is a mix of spiritual and material. And to the degree that we absorb ourselves in the material increases. And to the degree that we absorb ourselves in the spiritual also increases. So if we want more spirituality, we do more spiritual activities and you'll get more spiritual easily, naturally. It's just a logical, simple formula. So there comes a point where you have so much spiritual aspiration, like Vritasura, I'm going to hear. There's a demon. He's about to try and kill Indra. He's been produced as the enemy of Indra. He's not going to say to Indra, you don't have to, I'm not going to fight with you because you just kill me. I'm not going to fight. He's going to fight Indra to try and kill Indra, but he knows that Indra will kill him. And he's happy about it because his spiritual senses are already fully developed. And now, it's like when this is gone, like as if you say, when I take off this final covering, like a nut, right, in a hard shell, you crack that, then you've got the nut. So he's at that stage where he just says, crack it. Crack it. I don't mind. And Indra's like, what? I can't kill you. You're a great devotee. And he's saying, you can kill me and you should kill me. So that's when one becomes so much, the spiritual senses have become awakened, that the material world seems like the most extraordinary hell. There's nothing here of interest. Everything is on the other side of the fence. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his book Madhurya Kadambini, when he talks about what it's like at the stage of prema bhakti, he says that prema bhakti cannot be contained within a material body. It's too massive. So therefore one attains prema bhakti after the demise of the material body, then one in a spiritual form can obtain to that stage. Yes. Yes. That feeling of disappointment or dissatisfaction. Well, if you're really advancing in Krishna consciousness, you won't only be feeling disqualification. If you're only feeling disqualification, it might be a material problem that you have, like something went wrong in your marriage or something like that. But if you're actually advancing in Krishna consciousness, you'll be feeling more and more pleasure from your devotional activities. And simultaneously, secondarily, you'll be able to see your own disqualification. So in that context, the disqualification that you see doesn't cause you to feel hopeless. It causes you to feel humble. So there's a difference between hopeless or inferiority complex, or this is all in the mind. This is the mind trying to, it's usually what that comes from is the mind trying to battle with reality. Like, I want something, and it's just not coming. And so then the mind is like as if, like, you know, when you have these, there's this kind of instrument, I don't know, it comes from South America or something, like a thing like this and a handle, and you shake it, and it's got all these, sometimes it's one thing inside, and you shake it like this, and it goes bang, 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 like some kind of a sound. So it's like that's what the mind's doing inside our head. Why can't I have this? I want this. It's fighting with reality. That you're just tiny and you're not very significant. And that's what you are, like the ant. Why can't I be a human being? I've heard about these amazing creatures. Why can't I? But you're an ant. So this is just the materialistic way of thinking of the mind, just battling with reality, not refusing to accept reality. That's not spiritual. The spiritual is the chanting and the hearing, so that we're starting to feel that Krishna is a real personality in my life and I'm doing things for him and I feel so safe and protected because he's taking such good care of me and I don't mind just being an ant anymore. I'm not battling anymore inside, struggling and resenting. It's all stopped now. Now I'm peaceful. But I feel very, very, very insignificant. You see the difference? So one is material, and how can you stop that? I don't know, go and see a psychologist or something. You know? In other words, we come to Krishna consciousness with problems, and these problems will gradually be removed by the process of chanting Hare Krishna. But the problem is nothing to do with chanting of Hare Krishna. That's just what we carried along with us when we came, like we all bring our luggage, right? Some people bring a little luggage, some people bring a lot. And then we have to go on the journey of Krishna consciousness. If we say, see my Krishna consciousness, then oh, that's your luggage. Yeah. Your Krishna consciousness is this process. And what should we do? We have to be a little tolerant, but always the instruction for us is the same. Try harder. Try harder. You're not trying as hard as you can. And you'll be surprised if you accept that instruction, you'll see that you sort of and break through a barrier that seems unbreakable into a newer, next level of Krishna conscious practice. Yes, all right. So thank you very much for your questions and your hearing. This is our service to Shushi Gaur Nithai, to speak and to hear, to question and to try to apply what Srila Prabhupada sacrificed so much of his time and energy to give us. So as we try and do this, then this is our give Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas a great deal of pleasure. Thank you. Hare Krishna.